topic tonight in a continuing series on the doctrines and teachings of the church. Jesus revealed in Ten Commandments. What do you think of when you think of the Ten Commandments? It would be interesting to find out what would be the first thing that came to your mind if you were to write it down, lock it in. Ten Commandments. You feel good, bad, hostile, friendly, free, slave. I suppose you're familiar with the one who was the wisest man, at least they say that, who ever lived. Who is it? Who was it? Solomon. He was pretty dumb. He really was dumb, wasn't he? Why? Because he forgot where his wisdom came from sooner or later, didn't he? But at the height of his glory, he was known as the wisest man who ever lived. He came to the throne before he was 18. He hauled in gold from Ophir and silver from the mines in Spain. He imported precious stones and spices from Arabia and ivory from India. 10,000 people ate at his table every day. Annually, his fleets brought in resources from foreign shores amounting close to $10 million. The Queen of Sheba came to find out about it, and she said when she left, the half has never been told. And she gave him as a present $3 million. Solomon lectured on natural history, zoology, ornithology. He spoke 3,000 proverbs, composed 1,005 songs, and he had to be old enough to die before he knew enough to live. And have you ever considered his closing words? The last words he said, or near the close of his life, when he'd seen too much of life, were rather significant. Ecclesiastes 12, verses 13 and 14. Starts out with simple words. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Are you interested in what the wisest man who ever lived had to say as the conclusion of the whole business? After he had learned from God and after he had learned from the school of hard knocks, here's the conclusion. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. For God shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. Notice the sequence. Fear God and keep his commandments. And of course, we're talking about something more than just being afraid of God, are we? Respect God. Hold him in awe for who he is. Our Creator. This is what he's talking about. He's not talking about running from God. Solomon knew a very friendly God, and God was very patient with him. Solomon should have been dumped from the throne as far as our standards are concerned. Shouldn't he have? Have you ever studied some of his debauchery during the time when he left God? He saw a lot of life. And he tried to pack it all in, and it turned sour. When I was a boy, I used to hear my dad say to me something that sounded redundant then, and it still does. But I couldn't get it out of my head. He'd say, son, remember, it always, always pays to do right, and it never, never pays to do wrong. Touché. Agreed, Papa, you know. Really, this is what Solomon was saying. The problem is there's no power in the Ten Commandments. Is there? Is there any power there? That's what some of us have learned the hard way, too. So, what is the purpose? And how is Jesus really revealed in the Ten Commandments? Well, first of all, his wisdom is revealed, even in the judgment of people like Mayor LaGuardia, who was a great lawyer and mayor, who made this statement one time about a World's Fair occasion. He said that men have made 5 million new laws, but man has yet to make a single improvement on the Ten Commandments. Short, concise, comprehensive. So this has been considered so by worldly men. Paul, one of the greatest who ever lived, had a great deal to say in favor of God's law, in spite of his great emphasis on faith and righteousness by faith, right? Paul had a great respect for God's law, the Ten Commandments. And it was the Apostle Paul who gave us a clear delineation between different types or usages or purposes of the Ten Commandments, which some people confuse by not going to the trouble of finding out the difference between the different purposes, which we'll notice in a few moments. Jesus was very friendly to the Ten Commandments. Some people thought he wasn't. Why? They confused two things. What was it they confused? Tradition and God's law. And, you know, sometimes we could fall into the same shoes. So when Jesus had no time for their traditions, which many of them were in opposition to God's law, they thought he was really unfriendly to God's law. This is where they failed to make a distinction. But Jesus made it clear in Matthew 5, verses 17 to 19, that the Ten Commandments, God's law, were not to be done away with by him. Let's notice the wording. Think not that I am come to destroy the law or the prophets. I am not come to destroy, but to fulfill. Till heaven and earth pass, one jot or one tittle shall in no wise pass from the law till all be fulfilled. Now, of course, I can remember in public meetings as a boy hearing people make the contention that fulfill meant to do away with. And I can remember my father reading the verse that way. All right, he said, let's read it. Think not I'm come to destroy the law of the prophets. I'm not come to destroy, but to do away with. And that didn't make sense. Obviously, the word fulfill does not mean to do away with, because when Jesus was baptized by John the Baptist, he said, suffer it to be so now, for thus it becometh us to fulfill all what? Righteousness. He didn't do away with righteousness by being baptized. He simply made it more beautiful and his stamp of approval on it. All right, Jesus was friendly to the Ten Commandments, and for good reason. Who, by the way, had given the Ten Commandments? Huh? You know, it's interesting that Jesus was evidently taught the Ten Commandments at his mother's knee. How would you like to teach something to someone who had been the one who originated it in the first place? Matthew 22, Jesus gave a concise breakdown of the two major sections of the Ten Commandments, Matthew 22, 35 to 40. One of the lawyers asked him a question, which is the great commandment? Jesus said, thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart. This is the first. Verse 39, the second is like unto it, love thy neighbor as thyself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets. Now, occasionally someone comes along and says that Jesus gave just two commandments, love God and love your neighbor. But they fail to read the whole context, and in Jesus' life it is revealed that the Ten Commandments are broken into two parts. First four, thou shalt love the Lord thy God. The last six, thy neighbor as thyself. On these two principles hang all the law, all ten of them. And you've heard it, on my two arms hang my ten fingers. On these two principles, even though the analogy breaks down, four and six, hang all the law and the prophets. They're all there. They're all there. All right, Jesus was friendly to the Ten Commandments and revealed them in his life. And why? Because the Ten Commandments are in black and white or in solid concrete, in tables of stone, are the character of God written down. And I'm going to give you a list of texts, if you want to write them down, fine. We're not going to stop to read them all. Of how that God, and Jesus was God, let's not forget it, God and his law are equated. The same things are said about God that are said about his law, and vice versa. God is truth, John 14, 6. His law is truth, Psalm 119, 142. God is righteous, Psalm 145, 17. His law is righteous, Psalm 119, 172. God is perfect, Matthew 5, 48. His law is perfect, Psalm 19, 7. God is holy, Isaiah 6, 3. His law is holy, Romans 12, 7. God is unchangeable, Malachi 3, 6. The law is unchangeable, Matthew 5, 18. God is spiritual, John 4, 24. His commandments are spiritual, Romans 4, 17. God is forever, Psalm 9, 7 and 90, verse 2. His law is forever, Psalm 111, 7 and 8, and Psalm 119, 44. Which means that it always has been and it always will be wrong to kill and steal and lie and covet and commit adultery and take God's name in vain and all the rest of it. Always has been wrong, always will be. There is no time when these get changed by situation ethics or anything else. Right? Why? Because the Ten Commandments are what God is, what Jesus is. I like the story of the woman who goes to the dress shop, the dry goods store, and she's looking for some material to make a dress. She is rummaging through the bolts of cloth, and as she finally comes across one that appeals to her, she pauses and fingers the cloth, looks at it in the light, holds it away, sizes it up. The proprietor of the dry goods store comes by and says, you like that cloth? Well, I think I do. She says, I was just trying to visualize how this would look made up into a dress. And the shopkeeper says, well, it just so happens that we have this same material made up into a dress out in the front window. You probably didn't see it as you came in. And so they go out to the front window and they look at the dress made from the same cloth. And what does the shopper say? Why, in the bolt, it was beautiful, but made up into a dress, it is far more beautiful. I'll take it. We look at Ten Commandments with Mayor LaGuardia, and we say, not a single improvement can be made, except one. What is it? To see those Ten Commandments made up into a life. Into a life. And whereas these principles were beautiful on tables of stone, much more beautiful made up into a life, the life of Jesus. Jesus reveals the Ten Commandments. Made up into a life. Isn't that right? Now, some people get confused on the laws in the Bible, particularly the Old Testament and Moses. There are those who get them crossed up and mixed together. In the days of Moses, there were at least four or five different kinds of laws. There were civil laws, health laws, ceremonial laws, God's law. The ceremonial laws ended at the cross because the ceremonial laws had to do with pointing forward towards something that was to come. The Ten Commandments never did point forward to something that was to come. And this is the clue for those people who stumble over Colossians 2:14. Which were a shadow of things to come, 2:14-16. You can have a problem if you don't distinguish carefully between the types of laws in the Old Testament. The Ten Commandment law is revealed specifically in the New Testament by actual listing of different selections from the Ten themselves. Isn't that right? James, Paul, Jesus. All right? And it'd be pretty hard to argue with the fact that the thing that would qualify heaviest for God's law would be the one he gave from Mount Sinai with his own voice. Why did God give the Ten Commandments at Mount Sinai? Well, what was his purpose for them anyway? Let's notice the different listings of the purpose of law. Now, in the first place, the law is given for knowledge to people who have become ignorant. Romans 3:20, by the law is the knowledge of sin. Did Adam and Eve have 10 commandments hanging on the tree there in the garden? No, they didn't need them. Right? Why did God finally have to give them at Mount Sinai? He had 2 million, more or less, illiterate, garlic-smelling people who had forgotten a lot about what they ever knew. And they had gotten so low through the bondage of Egypt for over 400 years. And the degeneration, morally, of mankind had come on so strong that God finally had to write it down. Knowledge. My major professor said it, so it's not original with me, and I'm not so sure I'd be proud if it was original with me. He said, when I invite you to dinner at my house, I don't hang signs on the wall, don't spit. Why? You know, I give you credit for something better than that. I think you know better. But if it should happen that we would go so low that we couldn't keep from this practice when we go to the major professor's house for dinner, then he might have to have signs on the wall. Don't do this and don't do that, right? And this is sort of the situation. In the days when God finally wrote it down, to help ignorant people see Before that time, it existed. Joseph said, "How can I sin?" Abraham, it's told, kept God's law and his commandments long before they were written down. They knew about them. There's another purpose for law. James, the second chapter. The law is a standard in the judgment. A standard in the judgment. James 2, starting with verse 10, for instance. "Whosoever shall keep the whole law and yet offend in one point, he's guilty of all. For he that said," and then he lists them right out of the Ten Commandments. And verse 12, "so speak and so do as they that shall be judged by the law of liberty." Standard in the judgment. A standard of salvation. Standard for salvation. And in this sense, there is a word connected with it called liberty. Some people say that God's Ten Commandments are a yoke of bondage. Remember that God led Israel out of Egyptian bondage to Mount Sinai. Was it for the purpose of leading people out of bondage into bondage? James saw it clearly. From bondage to liberty. Liberty. And in this sense, you have something else suggested. The law is a protection. Now, isn't it? Isn't law a protection? Just plain law. Period. I'm not sure about the income tax laws. I don't know why I had to bring that up. But when I go down the mountain, on Howell Mountain, and I come to a blind corner, and I know good and well that there's some college student going to come around there and pass me on the blind corner in his Porsche. And if you think I got a thing about this, I do. I've been trying to preach a sermon about it, and the only thing I could find in Scripture was something about Jehu. And here he comes, you know, 90 miles an hour behind me, going to pass me on the corner, and I see a black car with white sides over on the side road, and I say, freedom, liberty, protection, because the Porsche screeches to a slow pace. The law becomes my protection, right? Friendly? A very friendly use of law, isn't it? A very friendly purpose. However, if I'm the one in the Porsche, it's a different story, isn't it? The law becomes my condemnation. And what does this reveal about Jesus? If Jesus is the law made up into a life, then there is a sense in which we're going to be condemned. But people are not condemned, only their sins, right? Sins are condemned, not sinners. Then you have the law as a schoolmaster. Galatians 3, verse 24. Paul was very clear on the use of the law in this sense. What does he mean by that? That a person isn't really inclined to come to Jesus seeking for pardon and forgiveness until he sees the gallows looming up ahead. A criminal does not apply for a pardon until he sees the electric chair just around the corner. And there's a sense in which the knowledge of God's love and his character as revealed in his law drives us to our knees and leads us to seek grace and Christ's righteousness. So the law is used in a legitimate sense as a schoolmaster or a truant officer, a tutor or whatever, to bring us to school, the school of Christ. It is legitimate to use law as a schoolmaster. It is legitimate to think of the Ten Commandments as a standard of righteousness. It is legitimate to consider the condemnation of the law for sinning and sin. It is legitimate and nice to consider the Ten Commandments in terms of protection and freedom and liberty. It is legitimate to consider the Ten Commandments as knowledge for ignorant people. But it is illegitimate, and always has been, to use law as a method for salvation. And this, of course, was a point upon which the Apostle Paul was merciless. He struck out with all the venom he knew toward people using the Ten Commandments as a method of trying to get to heaven, right? Now, some people will take this and will confuse it, turn it around, and say that Paul's statements concerning the law and its uselessness in terms of method for salvation is talking about the law as a standard in the judgment, and not so. You see how, without semantics and the proper definitions working correctly, people can really get mixed up on law and Scripture. But I'm thankful that Paul struck out at the law as a method of salvation. Romans 3, verse 20 and onward is some of his heaviest thinking on that point. And of course, the law reveals Jesus' love, because no one is going to be happy until he knows what the rules are. It has been demonstrated in the lives of young people, in school, in home, that a young person is never happy or secure until he knows what the rules are. Isn't that true? And young people are very unhappy when the rules of the game are not clear-cut, whether it's basketball or tennis or baseball. If you don't have the rules, you don't have the game. And if you don't understand the rules of life, you don't have a happy person. So the Ten Commandments, clearly, concisely, and yet comprehensively stated, reveal God's love for people who he wants to be secure and happy and know what the rules are. I like this poem that someone used, put the Ten Commandments to verse. I guess I've used it before, maybe. Above all else, love God alone. Bow down to neither wood or stone. God's name refuse to take in vain. The Sabbath rest with care maintain. Respect your parents all your days. Hold sacred human life always. Be loyal to your chosen mate. Steal nothing, neither small nor great. Report with truth your neighbor's deed, and rid your mind of selfish greed. There you have the Ten Commandments in verse. But the truth is that these Ten Commandments are the minimum standard, even though they're comprehensive, if you look at them longer, they're the minimum standard, like, who was it? Don Hawley said in his book, Getting It All Together. Sometimes we think they're the maximum in the 10 simple words, but not unless you expand them with the rest of Scripture. Just by themselves, you have the minimum. And should we be satisfied with the minimum? When God says, thou shalt not steal, that's one thing. But it could be something entirely of a different shade to be vigorously defensive of your neighbor's rights and property. Not just refrain from stealing. I mean, the sky's the limit the other way, isn't it? Same way with every one of them. Well, I'd like to remind you that if anyone ever comes along and says to you that God's law was done away with at the cross, and they find hostility toward God's law in their heart, they are advertising something Romans 8, verse 7, the carnal mind is against God's law, not subject to it. What does that mean? The sinful mind. The sinful person is the one who is against God's Ten Commandments. Put it down in your book and watch out for it every time it shows up. It's interesting the way someone will advertise their own condition. In Revelation 12, 17, we're told that it's the dragon that is against God's commandments. The dragon, and the same chapter identifies the dragon as the devil. And if someone says that the Ten Commandments are grievous, they haven't read 1 John 5, 2 and 3, we're told that they are not grievous. If someone says the Ten Commandments are a yoke of bondage, they're advertising something about their own hearts, their own attitude, their own motivations. Because Jesus magnified the law, made it honorable, Isaiah 42, 21. He did it again and again, Matthew 5, 21, 25, and so forth. But the problem is, if there's no power in two cold tables of stone, what are we going to do about it? How can we keep God's law in the same way that the paralytic man was able to walk, Luke 5, 24. People have taken a look at God's beautiful standard of character and right and have said, we're sunk. It's no use. Maybe you have found yourself looking at God's law, seeing its comprehensiveness, and saying, woe is me. When the commandment comes, I'm dead. There's no way. We can't do it, and that's true, we can't. But neither could the paralytic walk, and neither could Moses part the Red Sea, and neither could Jonathan vanquish the enemy with his armor bearer, and neither could Gideon rout the enemy with stupid accoutrements of warfare, and neither could Joshua cause the sun to stand still. But the truth is, the things that are impossible with man are possible with God. Do you buy that? You put an axe in the hands of a two-year-old, and you tell him to chop down the tree, and the axe is weak through the flesh. You put the same axe in the hands of my uncle, who was a logger, who used to run the saw with one hand while the fellow at the other end was using both hands and panting. And as a kid, I'd stand there and watch him and drool and admire my uncle, made like iron. And the tree comes down. And God's Ten Commandment law is weak through the flesh. But when the Son of God comes in, what the law could not do because it was weak in the flesh, becomes a different story. Is that true? Or are we moving into heresy now? Apart from Jesus, it can't be done. But we can do all things through Christ, who strengthens us. If you ever want to read something exciting and interesting, you dig into the old archives of sermons, and you, at the local bookstore, find this reprint from yesteryear by Charles Everson, Saved by Grace, one of these little pocketbooks. This man was an outstanding evangelist, and this was considered one of his most outstanding sermons. If you've never read it, try it. Saved by Grace and Not by the Works of the Law. In it, he tells the story of a preacher who tried to build a barn. He put the windows below and the doors above. He put the stable in the attic and the haymow on the ground floor. He really botched it up. And then the architect came along and said, I'll do it all over and I'll do it for you. Now, if you don't know anything about barns, you can learn from Everson's book. If you don't know anything about haymows, take a look. But it's a fantastic, logical, spirit-filled presentation that comes through so loud that it screams on the reasonableness of law and grace fitting together. And I'm thankful tonight that where sin abounded, grace did much more abound, aren't you? Okay, your turn. Any reactions or questions or comments, particularly from this section in here, before we close? 5 minutes. Anything on their mind they'd like to say? 10 and have the benediction.
Could you comment?
He wants some kind of understanding. I think he probably has it already on what we do with the other laws in the Pentateuch, civil laws, health laws. That's a probing question. I've often wondered about that myself. Obviously, the health laws are universal and timeless. He says maybe you'd like to do that another time. Thank you. I like that idea. Any other questions? One can help us on that. That's all right. Let's have some help on that. Yes, in here. He says, this obedience to the law. He didn't say disobedience. He said this, obedience to the law. He said, what is our part? What do we have to play in obedience to the law? I'd like to read you something from our series last year, Desire of Ages 668. All true obedience comes from the heart. It was so with Christ. If we consent, he will so identify himself with our thoughts and aims, so blend our hearts and minds into conformity to his will, that when obeying him, we shall be but carrying out our own impulses. Now, you notice there's one if we consent. So that leaves the thing hanging. How do we consent? Notice the rest of the quotation. The will refined and sanctified will find its highest delight in doing his service. When we know God, as it is our privilege to know him, our life will be a life of continual obedience. The consent is at the point of getting acquainted with God. Through an appreciation of the character of Christ, through communion with God, sin will become hateful to us. So the keys are getting to know God, learning to appreciate the character of Christ through communion with him, studying his life and character. To me, that is a good answer to your question, and I didn't give it. Is it on target or not? Are you looking for something else? Not sure what all you're saying there. If it's faith plus effort, faith plus works, but whatever you're saying, make sure you have authority for it. And not just tradition. Yes?
I think we should already.
Thank you for that Greek lesson there. By beholding, we become changed. Not by beholding, we change ourselves. He says it's a passive action in the...
Well, the will is active.
The will is active.
Results come from without.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else? Would like to... I'd like to have some of you give us credit, please, for talking about the law. For being friendly toward the Ten Commandments. Will you please give us 10 points for that tonight? Because there are some people that think that anyone who talks much about faith and salvation by faith has got to be unfriendly to the law. Not so. Not so at all. The only person who is friendly to the law and the Ten Commandments is the one who has faith. It's the only one.
You have been listening to another special American Christian Ministries presentation. This recording has been digitally reprocessed from the original audio cassette or reel-to-reel in order to make this CD available. The audio quality was improved as much as possible. International copyright, American Christian Ministries. All rights reserved. To order a copy of this or other presentations, or for a free catalog, please call toll-free 800-233-4450. International calls dial 717-652-7000. You may also order from our secure website at www.americanchristianministries.org. There you would discover the largest selection of authentic Adventist preaching available. American Christian Ministries is not a one-man band. It is an orchestra of outstanding speakers who are all on the same theological page. If American Christian Ministries has been a blessing to you, why not take a moment just now and send us a note or an email with your testimony? We'll share it with our speakers and volunteer workers to encourage them. Your prayers and continued financial support are very important to ensure the continuation of this ministry as we help prepare America and the world to meet Jesus Christ. He's coming soon.